there. It's Gary Parrish. It's Wednesday, November 6, 2019. Welcome back to the CBS Sports Eye on College Basketball Podcast, where we sometimes discuss camel fighting and leaky black. Matt Norlander is here with me, and by here with me, I mean like right across from me. It is 1:48 a.m. We're still inside New York's Madison Square Garden, inside Dressing Room 1, where I'd like to imagine John Lennon sat once upon a time. We just watched the Champions Classic, and in a bit of a surprise, the lower-ranked team slash underdog won each game. In the opener, it was number 4 Duke 68, number 3 Kansas 66, and we're going to get to that game momentarily, but I want to start with the nightcap, where it was number 2 Kentucky 69, number 1 Michigan State 62. Tom Izzo's Spartans, they got 62 of the 65 first-place votes in the preseason Associated Press poll, but they start the season 0-1. Norlander, focusing on the second game, are you surprised not only that Michigan State lost, but Kentucky controlled that game basically from the opening tip to the final buzzer?
Look at us. Who would have thought? You and me right here, right now.
He thinks he's a...
Not me.
He thinks he's that thing.
Yeah.
You think you're Paul Rudd.
There we go. Not me. No way.
Actually, I did.
I actually knew we'd be there. You know what?
I knew we'd be here.
I knew this is exactly where we would be.
This is exactly what would happen.
Yes, inside room one. Which, by the way, there's no shot John Lennon was ever here. Taylor Swift, maybe. But there's been many remodels and renovations to the garden. So I don't think John Lennon was ever in this. But you know what?
Fine, I'll
Kanye.
Fine. Maybe Kanye West has been here before.
Potentially.
Fine, Norlander. I'll leave here and I'll go straight to the Dakota building.
Okay.
I will be in the presence of a place where John Lennon was. I know he was at the Dakota building.
You're not going to the Dakota building at 3 a.m. with all the freaks. That's not happening here. All right. Games. Michigan State losing the way it did. Surprising. Even though each game wasn't over the top entertaining, at least they were relatively close. With Michigan State, and I'll get to Maxie and Kentucky in a second here, I don't think this is some grand, and we're not going to overreact. I promise you, I'm not overreacting on this pod tonight.
I might. I don't know.
You might go there?
I might. So it's late.
We're encroaching on 2 a.m. I guess anything's possible. Michigan State didn't play as well as I thought it would. Offensively, it wasn't as effective and efficient as I thought it would be. Now, some of that was Cassius Winston. I mean, he got into foul trouble. They had to take him off the floor. We got to see what Rocket Watts could or couldn't do. But going up against that Kentucky defense was obviously an issue. And then, just a few too many threes did not fall. But they did cut it close. And then the homie, Tyrese Maxey. Two-point game. Takes a three from Trae Young, Steph Curry range. Buries it.
And we had a straight line view of that, and it was good. Like, I elbowed you the second it left his hand. It was so obviously good the moment it left his hand.
It was really – first of all, Tyrese Maxey saved the night. Can we be honest about this?
He was great.
He was great.
And great even though he wasn't great in the exhibitions, which is among the reasons he came off the bench. In Kentucky's two exhibitions, he gets a total of 21 points, 14 in one, 7 in the other, and then gets 26 in the season opener against the top-ranked team in the country.
Yeah, and even John Calipari said after the game, I asked him, you know, basically about Maxey's play and in this environment and – said he, you know, he had scored as much as just about any freshman under Cal. Terrence Jones actually has the record with 28 points in his debut. But Cal said, that's the kid that I recruited. Mm-hmm. I have not seen that Tyrese Maxey since he got to campus. Now, part of that's because he goes up against Ashton Hagans in practice every single day. And even Cal was like, you know, Maxey's worn down by Hagans, but he's always got a smile on his face. Like, he's never mad at it. He's got this incredible resolve to him. We saw that tonight. GP, when I was watching Maxey go to work in the second half, it really looked like it was a senior out there. The amount of offense they ran through him, they put the ball in his hands, and Kentucky's going to be dangerous because quickly or Hagans or Maxey can all have the ball in their hands. And I think that's something that's a stark contrast from, say, Kansas, which we'll get to in a little bit. But great thing for Champions Classic, where we had all this buzz about 1, 2, 3, and 4. The games weren't great. And then weirdly, as we were talking, like, would this be the Champions Classic that would prove to not have a top 10 NBA pick? Well, there's Tyrese Maxey's not going to be Quentin Grimes. We're not going to get what happened last year when Grimes went off and had, like, 28,
right,
and then that was the best game he had of his career. Maxey seems like very much the real deal, plays great at both ends of the floor, long, strong, great shooter. Can't say enough good things about him. If you're a Kentucky fan, obviously, this is super inspiring because there's Nate Sestina, my guy. He played well.
Ray Bucknell.
I mean, Sure, that too. But Maxie was the story overall. And, you know, nice kid, humble kid. I couldn't be more impressed with how he played. And so, yeah, now Kentucky looked the best of any of these teams. I don't know if there really is a true number one in college basketball right now with that, after what we saw, but Maxie, I think it's fair to say, owned the night in the sport.
Yeah, imagine you're a freshman. You're coming off the bench. He came off the bench.
Mm-hmm.
You come off the bench, and you're a freshman guard who comes off the bench, first game ever in the collegiate level. You're inside Madison Square Garden. You're in New York City because there's no way to be inside Madison Square Garden unless you're in New York City. And you outplay the consensus preseason. If you think there's a way, explain
there's
it to
not.
Me.
Yeah.
And then you outplay the consensus National Player of the Year in Cassius Winston.
Yeah.
That's a big, big night. And I thought that was, frankly, the most interesting part of John Calipari's press conference. He said, that's who I recruited. The sniper that I saw in high school, and I hadn't seen him since then. He said, I'm walking around practice. Like, where is the guy I recruited? Your question led to, I thought, the most interesting comments from John afterwards, and he was happy. Like, when you are relying as heavily as he is every year, including this year on first-year guys, to be able to go win a game like this, again, you're playing the preseason number one, and Michigan State didn't play well. They didn't make shots. And Cassius Winston, yes, he picked up some fouls, but he played 32 minutes. He was on the court a lot, and you still handle them pretty much from start to finish. And Michigan State, like, made some runs in the second half. Like, I was afterwards outside the Kentucky locker room talking to Ellen Calipari and Megan Calipari, John's wife and John's daughter, because back to when they were at Memphis, like, I knew Megan when she was four.
Yeah.
You know, so to see her now as an adult is kind of weird. But Megan said, you know, the way the last 10 minutes of that game went down was the way she thought the entire 40 minutes would go. But it wasn't. Like, Kentucky controlled the whole first half, controlled most of the second half, and then held on. And if I'm John Calipari, that's what I'm most excited about. The number one team in the country with a veteran point guard and a Hall of Fame coach, that team came at you down the stretch, and you held them off, and then you extended the lead, and you were able to just make free throws in the final minute to win it. Really impressive stuff.
Very impressive. And Maxie did give credit to Higgins, who we called the Bulldog. Winston was 1 of 7 from three. Winston didn't have a horrible game. It was a just okay game, but we saw what – a really strong defense is capable of doing. Now, I understand Michigan State still isn't at full strength overall. But, man, that Kentucky defense was really inspiring because I don't even think they played an A game. I think they were strong, consistent. Michigan State was able to come back and give some scares there overall. But there wasn't enough opportunities for Tillman, I didn't think. Aaron Henry had some bright spots. With Kentucky getting what it got from Maxie, Higgins was serviceable. Sestina came up, and he was more impressive right off the bat in game one, Nate Sestina, than I thought he was going to be. Nick Richards got into foul trouble. That's still something he's got to curb. It showed up late in the game, which wasn't ideal. And then even Calipari said, like, you know, with the young guys, as expected, just they need to get back. They need to get into the lab. And Khalil Whitney, you know, decent first showing, but nothing too strong overall. It's a big stark turnaround, though, from a year ago when we were in Indianapolis and Duke gave Cal the statistically the worst loss of his career. Come back a year later, and it's a different kind of Kentucky team. You like the fight there. I think the experience matters. And then you can throw in someone like Maxie. Like, he is a dynamic, potentially program-changing player. And I say that in these terms. Yes, people viewed Kentucky to be of championship Final Four caliber. And we even said 2 or 3 podcasts ago when we talked about our All-American teams, who would be the 2 or 3 most likely players not on that list to make us look silly at the end of the season. We brought up specifically Tyrese Maxey.
Well, we brought up specifically whoever is Kentucky's best player, because that guy's going to be an All-American. You're the best player at Kentucky. You're going to be an All-American. And Tyrese Maxey, even though he didn't look like it in the exhibitions, he looked like it. In this game, he looked like he looked like so many other Kentucky players. Like, they almost always have a guy who can just go get a bucket when you need him to get a bucket. Cal compared him afterward in some ways to Jamal Murray, who was an incredible scorer at the collegiate level, has developed into a scorer in the NBA. It got to a point down the stretch where and the three-point shot you referenced at the top, I mean, that was just – that was all him. It's not like some he came off a screen and somebody got in the ball. Like, he was just – he just had the ball, and it was like so many late shot clock situations when you've got a guy who's gifted enough. Okay, now it's on you. Like, the rest of us don't really matter right now. Go score. And I don't know if every time you want somebody pulling up from 25 feet or wherever he was, but, you know, he not only was Kentucky's best option in that moment for Tyrese Maxey to get a basket, he understood that the best option in that moment is for him to go get a basket. And when you got a first-tier guy coming off the bench who hasn't been good, by all accounts, in practice or the exhibitions, to have that kind of confidence against the number one team on this stage, sold out, Madison Square Garden, Midtown Manhattan, I think that says something about it.
It's way impressive. I can't overstate to have someone play his first college game in this environment, on this kind of stage. He was completely confident. He had these great runners and floaters. I mean, it wasn't just one kind of shot. He was really kind of all over the court. Clearly the MVP of opening night. Now, real quick on Michigan State before we get to the second game. This is the kind of game that'll drive Izzo nuts because this game is unlike any other in that coaches, the players, they're working literally for months just to get to this point. And you don't know what kind of team you're going to see. And opening night can prove, you know, devastating for plenty of programs. I mean, we had Nebraska get the floor wiped by UC Riverside, and we saw Alabama upset by Penn. Shouts to Steve Donahue. So there were some
special shouts to Steve Donahue,
without a doubt. So there are teams that are going to take some bad losses on opening night. Now, this is a reasonable loss, but for you with Michigan State, I guess what stood out to you most in this game, Parrish, good, bad, or otherwise? Because Spartans fans, you know, they preseason number one, first time in program history. You're looking forward to this game. You're thinking maybe we're going to be able to pick off Kentucky and really just kind of assert our dominance right away. We did not get that from Michigan State at all.
No. And you know what? Like, if anybody's equipped to handle a tough loss early in the season, it's Tom Izzo in Michigan. They've been through this stuff, right? And even John Calipari said afterward, like, he's been on both sides of this to extreme degrees. Like, you know, big events like CBS Sports Classic and the Champions Classic, you know, he's beaten good teams by 30. He's lost to good teams by what he said felt like 60, specifically referencing last season.
I think he said 68.
Yeah,
yes.
We lost by 68 last season to Duke. It wasn't actually 68, but it did feel like it was 68. And so, listen, guys like John and Tom, and really probably everybody in the building, they're equipped to deal with this. Like, if you think any team in the building tonight can win a national championship, even the losing teams. And so I won't change my opinion much about Michigan State. I'll drop them in the top 25 and one, obviously. But if you thought, you know, 5 hours ago that Michigan State was the favorite in the Big Ten and a legitimate national championship contender, I don't know why you would move too far off of that after just 40 minutes. We know Cassius Winston's a special college basketball player. We know Xavier Tillman is a high-level college basketball player. We know what Tom has done throughout his career. I will say, though, and this is, again, not a big concern, but it seemed obvious to me, the more talented the team was Kentucky.
Mm-hmm.
And it probably shouldn't be surprising, and Kentucky recruits at a higher level consistently than Michigan State does. But how often, think about this for a second, can you be the preseason number one team in the country? According to almost everybody, 62 of 65 AP voters, according to Matt Norlander, according to me, according to KenPom, according to the coaches poll, and you step out on the court for your season opener, and you don't have the better roster. Like, the other team's got better players than you. Might not be a better team than you, although Kentucky looked like the better team. That's why Kentucky won.
Mm-hmm.
But that's an interesting spot to be in. Preseason number one, favorite to win the national championship. But, man, the other team we're on the court with right now, they just got better players. Kentucky had better players. Kentucky played better. And that's a great recipe to win.
It was great. Michigan State did not have it from three-point range whatsoever. That was a departure from last season when Michigan State ranked top 30 in the country and shot 38% from three. They only hit 5 of 26 from deep. Xavier Tillman missed some critical minutes. You know, they're going to need more out of a player like Tillman, and they just didn't get it. So overall, you know, I'm going to move on and get to the next game because we are not staying in this room until 2:45. I'm not leaving the garden at 3 a.m., GP. But I guess my final takeaway on this was Kentucky was the most impressive team. Tyrese Maxey was by far the most impressive player. You'll have the top 25 and one updated daily, obviously, going forward. And I would think Kentucky makes the most sense to be the number one team in those rankings as we spin forward. But with Michigan State, not much concern yet because we're going to be talking about them in short order. They play, they got to fly home and they're going to fly back to the Eastern Seaboard next week. They play at Seton Hall on Thursday, November 14th. And so we'll get a clearer idea. And, you know, they're going against Miles Powell and the Pirates there. So we'll see what we get from them. But, you know, let's hold off on saying Michigan State wasn't the deserving number one team in the preseason. I still don't know if that's necessarily the case. They just got caught on an off night by one of the best performances literally in the history of Kentucky basketball by a freshman.
And so you look at the schedule now. And by the way, the updated KenPom ratings, Michigan State still 0-1. I mean, still number one.
At 0-1.
Yeah, at 0-1. I wonder how many times a team with a losing record has been number one at KenPom. That can't be too common.
No, I mean, you might get it occasionally after the first game in a given season, but really even that's not common because up until the past 2 years, Champions Classic has not been, you know, when these teams have been played, if they've been at the top.
So yeah. Michigan State still number one at KenPom, 0-1 record, and to your point, they got Seton Hall next week. That's tough.
I mean, Miles Powell dropped like 27.
Yeah, no, Miles Powell.
No idea who Seton Hall played, but I know he played well.
Yeah, he got a bunch of buckets. I don't know if it was an efficient.
How many guesses would it take us to guess correctly who Seton Hall played?
Well,
20. We're not going to go through this right now.
I mean, I can look. I can tell you right now. They played Wagner.
Wagner.
They're dealing with Wagner.
Okay.
105-71 victory over Wagner. Miles Powell got big buckets, and so that'll be a fun game next week. Two preseason first-team All-Americans squaring off against each other, and it's like this wouldn't be the crazy. Both these things could end up being true. Michigan State could start the season 1-2, and still win a national championship.
That's correct.
Yeah, and I'm not predicting that, but it's certainly reasonable. So that's that. Michigan State loses as the preseason number one to Kentucky in the nightcap. The early game was Duke and Kansas. We're going to get to that in a moment. But first, check this out. Are you looking for a new basketball shoe? If so, this is Gary Parrish here to tell you that the New Balance 2-Way V4 features the groundbreaking use of fuel cell technology with fresh foam, creating the ultimate combination of rebound and cushioning. Every step feels explosive and dynamic, and the upper construction features a lightweight textile that's supportive and breathable. So whether you're hitting the clutch shot or locking down the opposition, the 2-Way V4 gives you the tools to play at a high level. Learn more and purchase the 2-Way at newbalance.com.
The all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend with your family. The Hyundai Santa Fe's features like available H-Track all-wheel drive, standard third row seating, available dual wireless charging pads. You've got the H-Track all-wheel drive so you can take on those dirt trails and kick up some mud. Or the third row seating gets your whole family in to experience the thrill together. The dual wireless charging pads make sure that no one gets stuck in the great outdoors with a dead cell phone. Think about those adventurous activities you can do, like me, taking a ski trip up with the family, maybe going on a camping expedition, anything and everything. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com. Call 562-314-4603 for complete details.
So the early game wasn't number one versus number two, but it was number three versus number four. So that's terrific by any normal standard. And in a bit of a surprise, I guess, especially considering Kansas was leading by 9 points with less than 15 minutes to play, Duke closes strong and wins 68-66, the big number that jumped out of the box score that if you were watching the game, you knew something wasn't right. Kansas, 28 turnovers, 23 field goals, 28 turnovers in a 40-minute basketball game. If you're Bill Self, you tell me the answer to this question.
Okay.
Are you furious because your team just turned it over 28 times in a 40-minute game, or are you encouraged because your team turned it over 28 times in a 40-minute game and you still only lost by two to a top-five team coached by Mike Krzyzewski? Or both.
I'm not copping out with a both answer. I hate when people do that. So
sometimes both is the right answer.
Yeah, pick a lane and decide.
Sometimes both is the right answer. Would you like a slice of pepperoni or a slice of sausage? Both.
But you're going to take a bite of one first, and what's it going to be?
Probably pepperoni.
That's right. So I think Bill Self should this is a pepperoni type of loss, I guess. I don't know what the hell that means.
Yeah, well, you lost me there for
a
second.
Well, it's 2:05 a.m. So I would be more encouraged only because it's November, and if I was a head coach, I don't get completely psycho and lose my mind until about, you know, President's Day or whatever. You know, getting to
when is President's Day?
Isn't it like mid-January?
Why do we even have that?
I don't know.
Makes no sense.
We can't do this right now. If it was 4:15 in the afternoon, I'd venture down that. I'm not going to get into this, okay? It's just not
Well,
going
listen,
to
that's
happen.
Your homework assignment in advance of the next podcast. Figure out why we even do President's Day.
Shouts to the presidents.
I don't feel like they need
We're
that.
We're at 45 right now. So
I'm aware.
Okay, so I'm more encouraged only because it's early November. It's fixable. It's aberrational, 28 turnovers in a game. That's just unreal. But here is a legitimately concerning part and what I take away from the Kansas side of this. They quite clearly, and I don't know if this gets – I don't know if you can fix this. They do not have a real backup point guard. When Dotson's off the floor, putting the ball in Marcus Garrett's hands does not seem to be – a winning strategy. You know, Ochai Agbaji is like this power wing who can handle a little bit, but he's not really there. So without Dotson available, Kansas has a significant flaw, and I think the turnover issue won't dissipate. So that is one. And then two for me, and if you want to take Kansas, go with Duke, whatever you want to do. The other thing I noticed was I don't think – that Doak, Udoka Asabuki, and Silvio De Sousa were on the floor at the same time tonight. They've got issues at the four and what they want to do if they want to try and play both bigs at once. David McCormick and Asabuki were on the floor simultaneously. And there were some decent moments there. But to me, overall, at the four, they still have some problems. I thought Duke was able to exploit that. And I thought Vernon Carey overall had like a solid debut. Obviously not the best Duke freshman on the floor, but I thought he held himself pretty well. But yeah, Kansas playing the way it did, I was actually pretty surprised. I thought Kansas was going to win this by 8 to 10 points. That wasn't even remotely the case. Not a disaster of a showing, but to me, like legitimately surprising. Like I thought they could lose, but I didn't think they'd lose the way that they did.
Well, yeah, I mean, I guess because you would never assume a team's going to turn it over 28 times, right? That's just not a normal thing in college basketball. And even if Kansas might have turnover problems throughout the season, they're not going to have it to that level too often. And you mentioned Silvio De Sousa playing for the first time since being suspended. I don't know what the technical term was. Suspended, was it?
Yeah, he was ruled ineligible.
Yeah, he was removed from basketball. He looked like a guy who hadn't played in a long, long time. He only was on the court for a little more than 7 minutes, 0 of 2 from the field. He had 3 points and just 2 rebounds. Basically,
a non-factor,
right? So Kansas has got some stuff to figure out. They almost always figure it out. But to me, once you just sort of get past the 28 turnovers in a 40-minute game, the most interesting thing was Duke and the balance with which they played. Because I had a coach mention this to me back in the offseason, like at USA Basketball, because there's programs out there recruiting against Duke, and you know everybody's trying to sell an angle however you can sell it. And one of the observations this person had made was that if you look at Duke, they're constantly recruiting, you know, 4 5-star guys, five. They're trying to get, you know. Mm-hmm. And yet in recent seasons, more often than not, everybody doesn't eat. You know, it's been like 2 guys go and get everything, and then everybody else is a role player. And so do you want to be a 5-star prospect and go be a role player? They're not balanced there. Like last season, it was Zion and RJ, and then – you know, Cam would pop up every once in a while, or somebody else might have a nice game. But Cam and RJ were good. RJ and Zion were going to get most of the stuff done. A few years ago, it was, if I remember correctly, Grayson Allen and Brandon Ingram went and got everything, and then you know everybody else was a role player. And yet, in this one, it wasn't like that at all. Trey Jones got a team high 15 points, but then Matthew Hurt got 11. Vernon Carey got 11. Alex O'Connell got 9. Cassius Stanley got 13. So you've got No Duke player with more than 15. Five players with somewhere between 9 and 15. And when I went into the Duke locker room afterward, I talked to Trey Jones about this. I talked to Jack White about this. I talked to Cassius Stanley about this. And they all, to a man, said, this is who we're going to be. Like, nobody's going to go out and get 22 a game for us this season. Some nights, it'll be Cassius Stanley getting 19. Yeah. Other nights, it's going to be Trey Jones getting 21. Other nights, it's going to be Matthew Hurt, probably when he, you know, flips in 6 3-pointers.
Yeah.
He's going to go out and get, you know, 25. But nobody the consensus seemed to be it will be surprising if anybody on this Duke team averages 20 points per game, and also surprising if the top three or four scorers on the team aren't within a point or two or three of each other in terms of points per game averages. And I don't know if that's better or worse than just having two guys go out and do most of the work. Like, that whole Zion RJ thing, like, worked pretty well. They were the number one overall seed in the NCAA tournament, but it is different. And I guess I'd say this. I know everything Duke lost off of last season's team, top three scores, three top 10 picks, four of the top five scores from a team that, like I said, was the number one overall seed. And they didn't enroll stars like Zion and RJ or even like Cam Reddish. But this team we watched tonight for 40 minutes, they are deep, they're balanced, they're tough defensively, and they took a punch from Kansas over and over again and responded each time, and then they're really strong at that point guard position. Like, Trey Jones was, you know, the one bounce pass he got to Cassius Stanley. Like, I don't know who else in the country can make that pass. I don't know who else in the country can make the run Cassius Stanley made. I mean, I went back, watched the highlight, paused it. When Trey Jones has got the ball and he's looking for Cassius running, there is a Kansas player even with Cassius, and then two players he's got to get by him. They're two, like, the three people basically even or more advanced than Cassius Stanley. He just outran all of them. And then Trey bounce pass through a Kansas player's legs.
Gorgeous looking play.
Really just about as fun of a transition basket as you'll see. They don't have the star power, but I do believe they're talented enough to, I don't want to go crazy, but yeah, maybe win the sixth national championship of Mike Krzyzewski's career. I'm not predicting it, but if the question is this Duke roster that lacks star power good enough to cut nets in April, my answer would be yes. I think it probably is.
Cassius Stanley could be the player that provides the right kind of swagger, attack that this team will wind up needing. I loved him on the grassroots circuit. Wasn't super consistent, but he showed a lot here Tuesday night that made me think that he would be a good fit when he originally committed to Duke. So for him to play the way that he did and step up was significant. And Krzyzewski said afterward that we won because of Trey. And I definitely agree with that.
Well, he's going to say that a lot.
He's going to say that
80%. Maybe every game.
It really might be every game. I'll get to Trey in just a second. But if Stanley didn't play as well as he did, I'm not really convinced Duke even wins the game. I think he was nearly as valuable, if not just as valuable. But they got enough out of enough guys to win by committee. I got to see it. Even if they're claiming this is how it's going to be, I got to see it come to fruition. I want to see where Duke is 12, 14 games deep into the season if we look up and they've got four guys averaging between 11 and 14 a game. It would be interesting if that happened, and Trey Jones is actually the kind of point guard that I think can facilitate to let that happen in a natural way that would be good for Duke, but I still want to see. Now, as
– well, let me stop you there for 1 second because, yes, let's take a wait-and-see approach. I'm happy to wait. But I did think it was interesting that they all made a point to bring that up. Like, this is who we are. And then just, like, when you look at it from a distance, Trey Jones is an incredible point guard distributor. He's not just a go-get-his-own-basket guy. He's not a lead guard in the way that so many great lead guards are, both in college and NBA. He is looking to run an offense as opposed to get to the rim. He is a point guard like James Harden is a point guard, but they are vastly different point guards and approach and everything else. And then you look at the rest of the roster, who is the guy you just throw it to and go get buckets? Like, last year, RJ would just go get buckets whenever he wanted. Zion could go get buckets whenever he wanted. Like, if you remember, I think it's the first Virginia game where was Trey Jones hurt that game?
Yeah, I think that was the shoulder.
Yeah, so Trey Jones is hurt. first Virginia game. And all Duke did, not all Duke, almost all Duke did, they just ISO'd Zion and RJ. They just spread the floor out and said, Zion, go score. RJ, now it's your turn. Go score. Zion, now you go score. And I'm not asking you, who's the guy on this roster who can go do it like that? Because the answer is obviously nobody. But who's even the guy on the roster that you just throw it to and say, go get a bucket? So I really do think it's going to be a situation where, you know, one night Cassius Stanley's going to have big games like he did in this one, 5 of 6 from the field, because he's sprinting and beating people down the court, and Trey's getting the ball to him in transition. In the 10-1 run that Duke used to tie the game at 47, there were two of those, transition dunks where Cassius Stanley just beat everybody down the court. So one game it might really be him. Another game, Matthew Hurt is going to knock down
I think he can maybe be that guy. I'm not convinced yet, but I think that he can maybe be that guy.
Well, I would assume that he's going to be so reliant on jump shots that some nights he's going to make them and some nights he's not, like most jump shooters in the world, especially at the college level. Vernon Carey, like, I don't think you just throw it to him every time and tell him to go get buckets. He ain't that guy. And so I really do think it could be a deal where somebody averages 16, somebody else averages 14, somebody else averages 12, 9. I think I believe that is what it's going to look like.
It could well look like that. I want to see how Hurt and Stanley respectively evolve and see what comes in the games to come. One note on Trey before we close up shop here. I asked him, in the locker room after, I said, you know, when we spoke a year ago, you guys got that huge win over Kentucky. You're obviously all smiles, but, you know, what was the difference then versus now? And did you have nerves, or what was your approach to this game? Not just like when you woke up today, but in the past few days or even the past week. And what I found surprising was Trey Jones said that last year when he was the fourth most heralded of all those freshmen, and he was stepping into a situation where, sure, he was going to be asked to start and produce. He said the pressure on that he felt, it like rattled him way more a year ago than tonight. And the reasons being, because of the attention on the Duke class, could be the best one ever, because his brother, you know, obviously, sure, Tyus played at Duke, and there was a lot about the comparisons. He admitted, like, you know, I don't love the comparisons. I know they're unavoidable. But here, even though he is the guy and there is clearly so much more on him now than there was a year ago, that's not the way that he sees it. I thought that was pretty interesting. And I thought a lot of that in retrospect showed, because Trey didn't have an absolutely fantastic game, but he had as good of a game as they needed him to have. And I do think that when we're podcasting in February, Parrish, and we're talking about Duke, wherever they are in the rankings, first, fifth, 12th, 17th, who knows where they'll be, I think that we'll come to find that more nights than not, a lot more nights than not, Trey Jones is going to have played at such a level that was required of him to ensure that Duke either got a win or stayed in a game that maybe it was expected to lose. So that was impressive overall. I came away impressed with Trey Jones and what he was able to do, and I was just wrong about that game. I did not, I even tweeted, I thought that Kansas really probably should have won by 10 points, but the turnovers were massive, and the point guard deficit behind Dotson was also a huge factor.
And if you want a hint of how important he is to what they do, 39 minutes he played in the game. For some context, R.J. Barrett played 35 per game last season. Zion played 30 per game last season. I don't know that you can keep Trey Jones on the court 39 minutes a game, and obviously they won't have to in some games because they'll be comfortably ahead early, late, or at some point in between. But an impressive first game for the Duke Blue Devils. And I guess we'll wrap with this. Obviously, this shakes up the top 25 and one. Michigan State was number one, and Michigan State is now 0-1. And I'm not a KenPom algorithm. I'm not just going to keep them. Right.
Okay. Right. I mean, you can. And by the way, as you're laying out what you're going to do, just for the record, the two teams we saw lose tonight were the only two ranked teams that lost on Tuesday. And we didn't have a shortage of ranked teams that were in action. So in terms of shaking up the rankings, you've realized, there's not room for movement really elsewhere in the poll.
Right. There were some ranked teams that got scared. Utah State got scared. St. Mary's was in a tight game with Wisconsin. But ultimately, the teams that were supposed to win that had numbers next to their names, they won, except for the teams in the Champions Classic.
Yep.
The higher ranked teams lost both games. And I thought this was interesting. Duke was the lowest rated team in the building. And that's the first time that's ever been the case
in the Champions Classic. How about that?
They've never been the lowest rated team in the Champions Classic. They were, and yet they beat Kansas in the opening game of the Champions Classic. So got to update the top. Yes, it's 2:20 in the morning. Still got to update the top 25 and one for in the morning.
I'm going to give a shout to Russ Steinberg right now, this moment right here, the SB Nation writer, because I apparently said I'd do it last year. We saw him. Gave us a little bit of grief. So you know what, Russ? Here's your damn shout at 2:20. By the way, I was walking to do a hit for HQ yesterday in the city. He was just like, Norlander, like a random street. He sees me. Kind of freaky. But you know what? I'm cool with it, Russ.
No, it was fun walking or being. And that's like, listen, I like the idea of moving the Champions Classic around, I guess. But, man, it's nice when it's here.
It's the best when it's here.
It's best when it's here. It's best when it's here. The garden was on fire. And then all
not literally, but yes.
And then
It really would have been incredible.
That would have been a hell of a deal.
If the garden was on fire.
If the garden was on fire, that would have been a hell of a deal.
Actually, we probably should have led the podcast with that if it was.
But, like, walking around New York City just today and also last night, because I got in, what's today? What is today? Today's Wednesday.
Now it's Wednesday.
I got in Monday and had to do, we talked about
HQ.
This already,
yeah.
HQ interviews with Bill Self, Tom Izzo. But walking around the city, like all around the garden in the bars, restaurant, it was just Kansas fans, Kentucky fans, Duke fans, Michigan State fans. And yeah, I had, I think, three different people stop me just on the streets to shout out Devin Downey.
All right, guys.
Now, listen, I'm not suggesting anything. Like, it's not like I can't walk around New York City because I get my.
I'm walking here.
No, nobody cares. But, like, people, you had an incredible amount of college basketball fans in a pretty compacted place in Midtown Manhattan, and you felt that when you were walking around the city. You were bumping into people in Kentucky jerseys and Duke jerseys. And so shouts to all of them, everybody who took a chance to took an opportunity, took a moment to say hello. So back to the top 25 and one.
Sure.
Preseason, I had Michigan State 1, Duke 2, Kentucky 3, Louisville 4, and Kansas 5. I will not keep Michigan State number 1. Obviously, they just lost their 0-1. If I were just moving up based on, hey, the team in front of them lost, let's move everybody else up, it would be Duke number 1 and Kentucky number 2. But I'm definitely sure I'm going to move Kentucky to number 1 and keep Duke number 2. And the rationale would be pretty simple. I think Kentucky was the most impressive team in the building. We watched 2 games, 4 teams, and I think Kentucky was the most impressive. B, they beat the number 1 team. It doesn't mean that if you beat the number 1, you get to beat number 1, but it's easy to justify if you do it. C, if I move Duke to 1 and Kentucky to 2 and Kentucky goes to number 1 in the AP poll, Kentucky fans will be messing up my mentions nonstop.
Oh, you love that.
I got no interest in that. So I'll go Kentucky number 1. I'll keep Duke number 2. And it is hilarious to me because every preseason, literally every preseason, when we rank Kentucky and Duke, wherever we rank Kentucky or Duke, and it's going to usually be high, unless it's Matt Norlander's rankings, then he might have Duke number 10.
That's correct.
In the 1 to 353. But the rest of the world.
Let's just play out the season a little while longer.
The rest of us have Kentucky and Duke very, very high every single preseason. And every single preseason, the thing I hear most often is, oh, God, overrating Duke again. Oh, God, overrating Kentucky again. And now you look up, and at least for my purposes, in the top 25 and 1 on the second day of the regular season when folks wake up, Kentucky will be number 1 and Duke will be number 2. And I think that's probably at this point in the season the way it ought to be.
We told these poor people they'd have a podcast at 2 a.m. We've actually heard from some of you who said you were going to wait up until 2 a.m. after.
I got a tweet from a gentleman who, because we were joking about, like, listen, people in Japan couldn't listen to it.
Yeah.
Like, we might need to do a Rui Hachimura segment to keep them interested. I got a tweet from a guy who actually is in Japan, and so he is fired up, and he is ready to listen to the Ion College Basketball Podcast. So, with that,
let's get out of here. By the way, just quick note: I'm going to, provided I can make it there, I'm going to be at Virginia at Syracuse tonight because it is Wednesday. And then we will pod again. The next pod will be Friday. So if anything notable happens from that in between here and there, just a heads up on the reporting end of things. I'm making the scoot up to Syracuse. See the reigning national champs open on the road. That almost never happens in college basketball. So we'll see what Virginia can do. And, yeah, close up this bad boy.
And I've got a 7 a.m. wake-up call for an early flight back home. So if I happen to bump into you, if you're a Michigan State fan, Kentucky fan, Kansas fan, or Duke fan, at LaGuardia earlier in the morning, and I look like I haven't slept, it's going to be because I haven't slept. Shouts to Devin Downey. Shouts to Chester, South Carolina. Shouts to Terry M. F. and Teagle. He's the legend. Shouts to Larnell. And please go subscribe to the Island College Basketball Podcast via Apple Podcasts. That's the best place to do it to ensure you get these episodes in your phone ASAP. Rate it favorably while you're there. 5 stars, nice comments. And we will talk to you again on Wednesday. No, we won't. Will we? It is Wednesday.
It's Wednesday. It's 2:26. We will talk to
you
again
on Friday.
Yes. Till then, take care.
Good job, Norlander. Thanks for handling that.
I figured.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.